Born in London.
Uh-huh. Whereabouts?
Marylebone.
Uh-huh. And what did your father do?
He was a civil servant.
Uh-huh. Who for?
Was in Inland Revenue. Uh-huh.
And did you have any brothers and sisters?
I had one brother.
Uh-huh. And is he older? Or
he was older. He's deceased now.
Uh-huh. And where did you go to school?
I went to school, first of all, in the Birmingham area. Stanley House School, and then to Solihull School, and then my father moved, so they did the civil servants as he got promoted, came down to Bristol, and I went to the Bristol Grammar School.
Right. And so, did you enjoy school?
Oh yes, I quite enjoyed it. I wasn't very studious. I think I worked as hard trying not to work, but I enjoyed the sports and things. And the grammar school in the OTC.
Right, so you enjoyed the OTC?
I did, Officer Training Corps, yes.
So what age did you join that?
Well, I must have been... I can't remember whether I did it at Solihull as well. I would be about 14, I think. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And what rank did you get to?
Well, I didn't get any rank, but I did get my Certificate A, which is really theoretically able to command a platoon, and you knew all the tactics, and one knew all the barrack drill and everything, and marching and business.
So, when you left school, what exams had you taken?
I took, I thought that they called it in those days, school certificate, I think it was.
And what did you imagine you'd go on to do? Did you have any ambition?
Well, not really. I've always wanted to play the trumpet, actually. But the war clouds were gathering, and it was quite obvious in 37 and 38, and I realised, or in my mind thought, there's going to be a war, so I sort of enjoyed myself, and that was about it, really.
Right. So, in September 39?
Yes, I volunteered, and I put my age up a year, because I was 17 then, you see. But fortunately, the recruiting officer had been the master in charge of the officer training corps. And he didn't query my age. He probably wouldn't have known it.
Yes, yeah.
He just assumed.
Yeah. So you volunteered to join what?
Well, I just joined the army.
Yeah.
And then I waited...
In Bristol.
In Bristol. Yeah. I waited for posting. And after, well, there were a few months in which I was with the local defence volunteers filling in time. And I think my father was a member of that. And then I was called up to Shrewsbury, King Shropshire Light Infantry.
So do you remember that journey up to Shropshire?
I don't really. No, I'd probably got a train pass or something like that.
And what was it like arriving at the
barracks? Well, it was a bit forbidding, actually, but then there were a lot of others turning up. So it wasn't too bad at all. And eventually they started to do the training, and they realised there were several of us who'd already done all this. So they then put us in a special platoon.
Right. So when you first arrived at Shrewsbury,
yeah,
what was your sort of welcome like? You know, I suppose the sergeant was there, was he?
Yes, they were, left, right, left, quick, march, but quite ordinary. The most interesting thing, I think, was having had a relatively sheltered life, meeting all sorts. So I remember in the barracks, we were moved to an old Maltings, which wasn't far from the main barracks, an old Maltings, and they had these double beds, and there was the Honourable somebody, and a miner, I remember, and there were all sorts. Anyway, this miner moved the Honourable's clothing from the lower bed to the upper bed, which was never so favourable. And so there was a bit of a row about that. But and, of course, the Honourable had either been to Eton or somewhere like that, and he was assumed to be a toff and therefore pretty feeble. But actually, he'd been quite a good boxer, and he more or less knocked the minor out. And after that, they were the greatest of pals.
So it was a bit of sort of...
Oh, it was really rough, yes. I mean, that was really rough, because you had to empty buckets and things, you know. And so that was real rough, and it was doing guard duty and things like that.
Did they see you as posh, do you think?
Well, I don't know. I expect some of them would have done, but others wouldn't.
You didn't get bullied because of it, or?
No, we were a mixed lot.
Yeah. So you did your basic training then?
Did basic training there, but in fact, of course, we really, in the main, a few corners polished off, we knew the basic training. So we were put in this special platoon and exercises, and then the question came for going for interview for the officers' cadet training unit, and one was put for that. Now there I was rather lucky. You had to have your birth certificate and two references. Really, I was a schoolboy, so the references had to come from my father's friends. And one reference came, and I had my birth certificate, of course, but the other one was slow coming. And actually, the poor chap, he lived in Birmingham, he'd got bombed out or something. Anyway, it so happened, the second reference came on a morning, and the sergeant came up to me, said, "Probin, where are your references?" So I just gave him my references. Now, if I'd handed over my birth certificate, they'd have had me out. So, anyway, I went for interview and where do you want to... So I, having been at Solihull, I did apply to go to the Royal Warwickshire Regiment.
Right.
And I went to Bulford, the OCTU, which was run by the guards. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty strenuous.
Right. So, were you keen to be an officer?
Oh, yes. Mm. Yes.
So, what was Bulford like?
Well, Bulford was, it's on the Salisbury Plain, nothing much there, run by the guards. It was very efficient, and you had to move smartly, and you got this wonderful thing, the regimental sergeant major, with, "When I say sir to you say sir to me, sir." it was okay. Everyone was young and fit. You went on exercises and all that sort of thing.
So, what sort of interview had you had for this officer's training? Had they grilled you?
Well, they grilled me. What was my, I think having the Certe and the OTC helped, you see. They asked me about my brother, where he was in the tank corps, he was a bit older than me. And, sort of background, and what did I want to go in? And you had a choice of three, and I said infantry, gunners, or engineers. And I remember one said, "Oh, that's good. None of these, none of the support line, I was going for the fighting units." He approved of that. And anyway, they got posted to the Warwickshire.
So the training proceeded then. Was it much more than the basic training?
Oh yes. Well, we were literally doing command of a platoon, and then they switched it about, and tactics and that sort of thing. Yes.
So the way they taught you about commanding.
Yes.
Do you think it was a good way? Or
well, it was quite
old-fashioned.
Well, nowadays it'd be old-fashioned, but I think it was good. I mean, you were taught that the men came first. I mean, for example, you've been on a route march, and you just have to inspect the men's feet. You didn't go to the mess and take your pack off. You went to the line, saw the men, then you went. You see. And I think at that time they had tried, this is pre-war, having platoon sergeants. And it didn't work too well, because they were, not old soldiers, but they looked after themselves. Whereas I know it's not favourable now, but people who've been to public schools and grammar schools, they were, had been taught more or less to look after other people first. There was a responsibility. And so that was the way we were taught and the way we had to behave when one was commissioned.
Were you sort of taught to sort of think about the welfare of the men, you know, maybe with their family problems at home?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. What sort of things did they, because, you know, I mean, some of the men may have had problems at home.
Well, this is the next phase, really, when I was appointed to the Royal Warwicks as a second lieutenant.
Yeah.
I only was in the depot 2 days or so, and I was off to Northern Ireland.
Right. So how long was your training at Bulkland?
About 6 months.
Right. Mm-hmm. And when you passed out from there?
Now, you had a week's leave, commissioned, and sort of, at the end, tailors came and measured you for a uniform.
Yeah.
And then I got sent to Northern Ireland.
Whereabouts?
Near Londonderry. And they'd taken over an old big house there, and of course, having arrived for the weekend, immediately one got appointed duty officer for the weekend. She knowing very little, and I can remember had beyond answering the phone as the brigade major, tell the colonel there's a meeting at the barracks tomorrow. So I said, which barracks is that, sir? Which barracks, you bloody fool, he said? There's only one barracks in London, really. And then we went on a church parade. They had a band and everything. And, of course, you were put in the part of the adjutant. I mean, I'd only been one with Pips for about 4 days. But
and how old were you now?
Well, I was 18, I suppose.
18, yeah.
See, they thought I was a year older. And then we went on church parade. I hadn't been on one of their church parades before, and we marched along, and as the adjutant house, there was the band, and then there, I think there was me. And anyway, the band was playing, and of course there were a lot of churches, I don't know where we were going, and suddenly there were footsteps behind me, and it was the company sergeant major was taking the part of the sergeant major. The parade has halted, sir, he said, and I was following the band because I didn't know. And they all filed in.
Yeah.
And the colonel of the battalion was, in fact, a guardsman. And his wife commented that we looked like a lot of constipated canaries. Anyway, so that was... And then after that, we went on... So they got down to it, exercises. And we got exercises for going without sleep and exercise for this, that and the other. And it went on for 9 months. I must say, I got a bit fed up with that because I thought the war was going to miss me by, you see.
Yes.
Bear in mind, I'm only 18.
Do you remember any of the officers or NCOs from that time?
Yes. There's one wonderful chap who'd been a pilot in the First World War.
Mm-hmm.
He was a captain. He was known as Cappy. And he'd try and get you in the mess. He'd tell you what he knew what it was like to die. I think he'd been shot down or something. And he'd get the youngsters in the mess, keep us up drinking, you know. But then we went on an exercise, and they used to, very cleverly, they pretend someone had been killed, like the CO. So then our company commander was the senior. He became commander battalion. And Cappy, who was second in command, he became our company commander. And this is about 2 or 3 in the morning, marching along. We had to take up a position, but either side of a road, there were hills either side. And there were 3 platoons in a company. And he said, I'll have a platoon and a half up there, and a platoon and a half up there. We said, you can't have a platoon and a half, Cappy. You've got to have a platoon. Or so. Oh, well, you get on with it, he said. That's what we did.
How did you get on with the other junior officers?
Oh, very well, very friendly. And that's when I first got, and my batman had been a shoe salesman, and he was quite a nice chap. And of course, we got leave from Northern Ireland. And in particular, the thing I was very pleased with, there was a chap, I forgot his name, he was always in trouble. He was basically a nice chap, but always getting into trouble. Either go out and get drunk or something like that. And when leave was coming up, I realised he didn't know anyone. He'd all go, where are you going? Oh, I don't know. Sharp bowler. So I said, well, he must have someone. Anyway, I instigated inquiries through the, whether it was the British Legion or the Red Cross. Anyway, he had had a sister. He'd been in a, not a poor, you know, home or something. And anyway, what I was so pleased with, they traced his sister.
Really?
And I had a lovely letter from her. So that was, I was pleased with that.
Because I suppose if one soldier wasn't doing very well and was appearing to be, you know, sort of not really putting his heart and soul into it, it was quite often a welfare problem, was it?
Often, it's not. And some of them were, not many, but one or two were bad hats, really, but not many. There's usually a reason. And, of course, you're, as a platoon, you're anxious that your platoon is the best in the company, and the company wants to be the best in the battalion. And so if people aren't pulling their weight, you sort of look into it. And some of the other chaps put on peer pressure. But you've got one or two. One super chap was a corporal, and he was a very efficient corporal, but he would go out and get drunk. And he would lose his stripes, and he shone, so he'd get promoted again, and he'd lose them again. I remember a chap called Insta, yes. But that's really where I learned, and you learn it, I suppose, not the hard way. You know, you've got these men, about 30-odd men, that you're responsible for, really. And they come to you with their problems and troubles and things.
It's quite difficult when you're 18, really.
Well, I suppose it is, really.
Experience of life and
yes,
problems,
yes.
Employment problems.
No.
It's very limited.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. But you've lost your way through.
Well, you yes, you learn, and yes, and you can inquire and do things like that.
Mm. Who was the CO?
He was a delightful. I think his name was Anstey. Came from. I'm not sure whether they were a brewing family. Quite a well-known family up in Birmingham or Warwickshire somewhere. That's of the battalion. Mm. Yeah. And he was Royal Warwick's.
Did you see much of him, or was he quite remote?
No, saw quite a bit. And then there was another chap, one of the company commanders, later became the planning officer for Birmingham, I believe, or somewhere like that. Anyway, after that period, then I heard that the Indian Army were expanding. So I applied.
Did you? Why the Indian Army? You know, what?
Well, it sounded good to me. I mean, you bear in mind, before the war, I mean, one had never been abroad. You didn't have trips to France and all that business.
Yeah,
I thought that would be nice, right over the other side of the world, sort of thing. And then, of course, then you go have another interview. And they said, well, so where do you want to go? So I said, well, my brother's in tanks, but he was a prisoner of war, taken prisoner at Tobruk. And I said, there is, in India, there is a regiment called Provin's Horse, which are cavalry. And I think they were light armoured cars. I said, well, I think I'd like to go to Provin's Horse. He said, oh, well, so you're infantry trained, they said. It means you'll have to go on a sort of another 6 months armoured course. That didn't appeal much. They said, would you like to go to the Gurkhas? I said, oh, that's fine, yes, lovely. So I said that. And then I went up, eventually was called to go up to Glasgow, where they were assembling a whole draft of officers, young officers, to go out to India. Because they were expanding the Indian Army, you see. And after a few lectures and things there, we got on a boat and off we went.
Right, and you were earmarked for the Gurkhas, weren't you?
I was earmarked for the Gurkhas then, you see. And all of them had been earmarked, I think, then, for different regiments, the Sikhs, and, you know, and all that sort of thing.
Do you remember the date that you left Glasgow?
I don't, unfortunately. I think it was probably in 41 sometime. It probably in late 41, I don't know. Because I remember we spent Christmas in Freetown, which is now, what's Freetown?
Sierra Leone.
Yeah. Oh, right. I mean, we weren't allowed off the boat. But, and I remember also on the convoy, we had to go up north around Iceland because of submarines or something like that. And then we pulled in at Durban. And that was lovely, 10 days in Durban. People so hospitable, we'd go off the ship and you'd line up as if you were waiting for a taxi. And the locals would come along in their cars, pick you up. Off. And we were picked up by a chap who was secretary of their equivalent of the RAC for Durban, who had been a captain in the Sikh regiment earlier on, and took up his house. And every day they sent the car for us, and we went to the house, had drinks on the stoop, or whatever they call it, even laid on girlfriends with their friends, and handed us the keys of his car. Off you go, enjoy yourselves. Mm. They were so hospitable, and they were very anxious that we should go back after the war, not from a coloured thing, but because of the Afrikaners, the war. So they were still left over from the Boer War. Yeah. And Durban, which is Natal, is fairly British, or was, and they wanted to increase the British element. But I won't say that, but they were very kindness itself. Super. And then we left them after 10 days and went to India, landed in Bombay.
So what was that like, landing like? I mean, you hadn't travelled very much.
No, I was very pleased. And then in Bombay, I'm very fond of jazz, you see. And I thought, well, I must have some records. And I went to buy a gramophone player, you know, mine. And I went into a shop, I don't know... Do you know Duxon and Pinker?
Yeah, I do.
So rather superior. Well, that equivalent of that, you see, but it was in India, and the price. And I started to try and haggle. He said, excuse me, sir, this is not a bazaar. So you learn the hard way. So I bought my gramophone anyway, and managed to buy some record, jazz records.
Do you remember what sort of gramophone it was?
I think it was an HMV.
Yeah. Was that the wooden?
Wooden, yes. No, it had a sort of canvassy black case, and you opened up that way, that's right. Yeah. And of course, they set the record for 78,
you
know,
you
I've still got them.
Have you?
Some of them.
Yeah. Hmm? Do you remember what you bought? Which artists? Or
well, people like Count Basie and Benny Goodman and Tommy Dorsey and all those sort of people.
So how long did you stay in Bombay?
Oh, not, I should think, about 3 or 4 days, that was all.
And where did you stay during that time? Did they
there was a transit camp just out of the town.
Yeah. What did you know about the Gurkhas then?
Well, not a lot. I'd heard of them. And I knew they had a good reputation as infantry people. Yeah. And so I suppose that's why I was pleased. And whether they sent me there because I was talking about Probyn's horse or not, I don't know. And then we went to Bangalore.
Oh, right.
And that was for 3 months. And that was really to, I say, Indianize us. We did all these troops tactical exercises without troops. You know, you go and they set a problem and where would you put this and that and how would you capture that hill and so forth. We did a lot of that. And we also learnt Urdu.
Oh, really? How easy was that?
Well, not too bad, really. Of course, you had proper teachers there. And don't forget, I suppose I'm properly 18 or nearly 19 by now. And I was a full lieutenant then, yes. So that was 18, you had to be 18 months before you were a full lieutenant in those days. And that was good, but it was quite hard work, and we learnt all about the structure of the Indian Army and that sort of thing.
And what did you think of India?
Oh, fascinating. I think... No one treats an Indian worse than an Indian. Mm. Well, you know, they're sort of upper-type Indians. But, I thought they were a lot of them very nice people. Mm. One felt sorry for them because they're so poor, it's not true.
Mm. And how did you cope with the climate?
It didn't worry me. No, it didn't worry me.
Not a problem.
And so then after... the 3 months had gone, we went on the train to join the regiment. My own regiment went off. I had another two chaps with me who were also going to the same 7th Gurkhas, and went on a huge train journey which took 6 days.
Really?
So, from Bangalore, we went to Madras and changed trains, and then up to near Calcutta. And part way up, I remember a Japanese plane came along and dropped a bomb somewhere, so the train stopped, and the train crew pushed off up into the hills, and we were left there. People marching up and down the line, where's the driver? Anyway, he eventually was found and brought back, and we went our way up. And then went. I joined the regiment in Assam.
So you had quite a good tour of India on the way.
Well, it was a sort of straight up, but saw quite a lot, and people sitting on the roof of trains, and every station you stopped. Of course, if you want for food, you didn't have rest, you stopped, and you went into the nice restaurant, you see.
So did you feel quite, I mean, you were a very young man.
Yes.
You're now a lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
You're now
in India.
In the empire. In
yes,
India.
Yes.
I mean, you must have felt quite... you had quite a lot of status, didn't you?
Well, people, yes, they know, especially one did, really.
Mm. So what was it like arriving at Assam?
In Assam? Well, that was very interesting, because the country is very nice, all hills and things. Joined the regiment, and of course, having joined the regiment, immediately we were standing there, hadn't got our sort of Gurkha badges on, we were still Royal Warwicks, and a subedar came up, saluted, and I don't know what he was on about. He was asked for permission to dismiss the parade that was going on below us. So we got that right. And then, of course, don't speak of Urdu here, Gurkhali. So one had to learn Gurkhali. But it's not so bad. It's rather like if an Indian had come over here and learnt to speak, shall we say, Spanish, and then they said, well, sorry, we only speak Italian. You know, you've made the change. The words are different, but the structure of grammar is different.
So did they teach you formally?
Well, yes. We had, in the depot, we had a sort of senior officer who'd been out in the pre-war and spoke it fluently, and so we got the grounding of it. And then, of course, you don't get many British officers in a Gurkha battalion. In the centre there are a few, but then you were passed off, because each Gurkha regiment had four battalions. And then when you get to... Well, I'm jumping ahead. So we did that, and then we moved from Assam. We did patrols against the Japanese and things like that. And then we moved to a place north of Lahore, all I can say, more or less in the foothills of the Himalayas. It was lovely.
So who were the other officers who joined the 7th Gurkhas with you?
With me. Well, they'd come from other British regiments, but we did meet at the Octo at Bulford. And then I was surprised to find them on the boat going out to India.
Do you remember their names?
Yes, there was Tim Norman and Norman Barr in particular, I remember. And they gave me the nickname because they'd been in Glasgow before me and they'd had a pretty dissipated time. I, of course, had arrived all fresh from charging about Northern Ireland and they called me Pinky Probin. And that word, that has lasted me with my army connections.
Yes. So, to a station north of Lahore, was it?
Well, it was just, we had to make a depot. It was really a tea garden. And the chaps had to get down to it and clear the bushes and build it up. And it became a depot.
Right. So, lots and lots and lots of things for you to learn. I mean, huge differences, I imagine, in procedurally in the Gurkhas compared to a...
Well, they were, I mean, they ate twice a day only in those days. And... yes, but if you're living among them, it's and you play sports with them and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, you haven't met any Gurkhas until you got there.
No, I haven't.
So, what
Well, a cheerful, very hard working. It was a privilege to be a soldier, me soldiering easy. I mean, you go in the barracks in the evening and they'd be drilling and taking down brain guns and things just to improve their performance. And they like that to this day.
Yeah. What a change, though.
Yes.
In the attitude.
Of the British soldiers. Yes.
We do as little as possible to get by.
Yes, yes. And also, if, because in the Indian Army you had what was a Viceroy's Commission, I don't know, do you know all this?
No, I'd like to hear.
They have a Viceroy's Commission, which it was in between a non commissioned officer and one with the King's Commission, as it was in those days. And they were called Jemadars, Subadars, and there was one, the Subadar Major, the old boy who'd been serving, you know, man and boy and his father and his uncles and everything, and he'd sort of almost be the colonel's right-hand man in the battalion. There'd be a second-in-command British chap. And they were great, but you could go, they loved, you invite them to their mess. They had their own mess. And the great things, they liked their rum, and they like their beer. And I mean, if you had drunk too much, they see you back or carry you back to your tent. But in the morning, salute as if they were just meeting for the first time.
Really?
Yes.
So they were quite sort of, almost
as
if they were looking after you.
Well, in a way they did. They were very friendly. And of course, we had little recruits used to come in.